Hello, this is Ian Harper welcoming you to Business of Weather podcast, produced in association with Asia Climate Forum, Asia's largest event dedicated to extreme weather and climate change, flooding and poor air quality. In each episode, we'll investigate the increasing impact of extreme weather and climate change on business and society, and look at how weather technology and climate information services can help address the growing challenges. We'll also spotlight the new opportunities for entrepreneurs and business startups seeking to develop the business potential of technology innovations to help those affected by extreme weather. In the coming years, climate change may play a significant role in matters of national and international security, and a threat of armed conflict and even war. In autumn 2016, during the last months of the Obama presidency, a White House memorandum titled Climate Change and National Security warned that the effects of climate change could increase refugee flows and exacerbate crises and conflicts in places already facing instability and fragility. Examples of the impact of climate change on conflict are all around us. In Syria, years of drought forced people off the land and into the cities, placing great strain on an already unpopular regime. In Darfur, in South Sudan, climate change and the resulting desertification has damaged water supplies and aggravated access to dwindling natural resources. But just how big an influence is climate change on conflict? A study that aimed to find out was published in Nature in June 2019. It estimated that climate has influenced between 3 and 20% of armed conflicts over the last century, and that its influence is likely to grow. However, the consensus among the experts featured in the study was that economic, political and social issues are more important. However, this could change as climate change accelerates. Business of Weather spoke to Louise Van Schaik, who heads up the Planetary Security Initiative, which was launched in 2015 by the Netherlands Ministry of Foreign Affairs to research new approaches to reducing climate-related risks to conflict and stability. Welcome, Louise.
Good morning.
Right, Louise, just to get the ball rolling, tell me, how significant is climate change when it comes to matters of national and international security?
Well, climate change has become really a significant issue for national and international security, both because of its direct impacts, extreme weather, flood risks, droughts, but also because such factors undermine socio-economic activities and thereby can aggravate already existing threats in society. So it is clearly a risk if your country is being flooded, if even your island is submerged to the sea, if temperatures rise above 45 or even 50 degrees Celsius, or if hurricane seasons become more intense and destroy the place you're living in.
Right. Now, what would you say are the biggest risks to security posed by extreme weather and climate change? Could climate change lead to war and armed conflict?
Yes, we certainly have indications that climate change acts as a threat multiplier, and usually in situations where already other factors are at play that aggravate tensions in the society and present a conflict risk. But in the cases of Sudan and also the case of Syria, there is indications that climate change has aggravated factors that have contributed to protests and eventually even conflict.
Right, just to expand on that point, what sort of factors has climate change exacerbated, do you think?
Well, very often climate change is related to higher prices of staple food and less access to drinking water. So in situations where water is already scarce and in situations where all of a sudden imported food or locally produced food becomes much more expensive or much more scarce, or if people can't live anymore on the places where they grow this food, then it's they become more sensitive to join, for instance, armed groups in society or to protest against the government. And usually there's also, of course, other factors at play, dictatorships, other factors. But that's a reason why, you know, there is this indications that climate change contributes to conflict.
Now, tell me about the Planetary Security Initiative and its aims and objectives.
Yeah, so the Netherlands government in 2015 decided to start with the so-called Planetary Security Initiative to focus on this relationship between climate change and other environmental stresses on the one hand and basically insecurity on the other hand, and to bring together the people that work in this field from diplomacy, defense and development. So just to increase the understanding, but also to elevate this issue to a next level in terms of awareness and international policy debates, for instance, in the UN Security Council at EU level, but also at the local level, but also to think about ways how we can use such insights to reduce security risks. So not only to stay into the academic discussions, is the relationship between climate and conflict, and is climate change acting as a threat multiplier, but also then, if we know this, what can we actually set out to do about it?
Right, thank you. Now, you organised the Planetary Security Conference in The Hague in February 2019. What was this all about, and what were the main conclusions?
So what we did is that we organized a big conference with over 450 people from over 55 countries, policymakers, and also other experts. And we discussed specifically for four spotlight regions, Mali, Iraq, the Lake Chad area, and the Caribbean part of the world, how climate change and environmental stresses relate to security and what could be done about it. And the year before, we had already launched the Hague Declaration on Planetary Security, in which we already set out some possible avenues to address insecurity. And at the conference, we basically talked about how it could be done and had ideas. And we also tried to list, let's say, possible actions. So that was also the main conclusion, that you need now to go to this next phase and really also act on this agenda. Of course, that also requires, let's say, governments to really step in. We have the impression, as we if we look at the UN Security Council debates and also EU debates, that international actors are more taking this into account. So that was something that we contributed to.
Right, now that leads nicely to my next question. How seriously are national governments taking the security threats and challenges posed by climate change?
Yeah, I think they increasingly in the past decade take it serious, and it's also increasingly integrated in threats analysis, risk assessment, foresight studies. But what I do see is that they have not yet translated this really in policies and policy change. So they, on the one hand, they still struggle with how to do this. And on the other hand, of course, it would demand, let's say, changes. And if you look at the people who work in peace building, conflict prevention, and then they already have to take into consideration so many factors, and often they operate in very stressful, urgent situations where they immediately have to act. And then climate change has not traditionally been one of the first priorities. So let's say the challenge is now to see how you can still take climate change and environmental stresses into account, because it is a factor that underlies, you know, tensions between different groups in societies. So if you if you have a better understanding of this, you can actually work on this and use this in your efforts. And that's something that governments are not yet doing enough. Another field of work is this disaster preparedness, where also more could be done to integrate climate change into the policies. But I think it's growing, of course, in some countries more than in others, and also in countries where climate change is not recognized as such as a global challenge. It's also more difficult to see how you can diminish security threats of climate change. One other thing, perhaps, which is relevant, is also that what we see in our research is that countries do see, let's say, the climate security threats in other parts of the world, but they tend to deny or are less comfortable with also acknowledging climate-related security threats on their own territory. So when it comes to floods, heat waves, the melting ice in the Arctic, and the potential geopolitical implications this has, there you see that Western countries tend to downplay this a little bit more. They don't want to see it.
Do you think the general public has any real awareness of the potential significance of climate change for conflict or political instability?
Yeah, on the one hand, you see a tendency that climate change as such has been labeled now climate crisis, so there is much more awareness. But it's more considered as a humanity crisis than that it's, let's say, a typical defense type of security challenge, whereas this is certainly also the case. So this aspect is not yet trickled down very much with general public. But if you talk about it, or if we have discussions, then people do recognize it and do see it. But I think, let's say, a better recognition could take place. Of course, there's also the issue that in the climate change community, there's also a tendency to present climate change as an opportunity in terms of the energy transition offering economic opportunities. And also, if you're ahead of the curve undergoing the energy transition, that you can have competitive advantage of this. And this narrative, if you like, is not very much commensurate with the narrative of climate change as a threat. So I think there's also some resistance in the mainstream climate change community against what they call securitization of climate change, which I think is a pity, because in that way you also kind of downplay the issue. And the issue is real in my perspective. I mean, I don't say that you have to be overly alarmistic about it or to dramatize it, but there is a real issue there that needs to be addressed.
Now, I've heard the term environmental terrorism used to describe the use of scarce resources as weapons. Can you point to any examples of the use of environmental terrorism, or examples of where climate change has contributed to armed conflict?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one example is the case of IS, ISIS, in Iraq and Syria, where we have really clear indications in the plans of IS that they used water, strategic water resources as a weapon, the possession of dams, the control over dams in the rivers, to win, on the one hand, the hearts and minds of people, to recruit people. What you saw is in the parts of Iraq, for instance, where ISIS came up the quickest, the government had kind of ignored before the problems with the water issues. And because IS was addressing that and taking it into consideration, it helped them really to recruit people. So that's water. And water availability is, of course, not only related to climate change, but also to water use and other factors. But there certainly is the situation that the water becomes scarcer is, of course, related also to climate change. Well, the other big example is, of course, in the Sahel region, where you also see that the land and the food and water available is becoming increasingly scarce, and the same land is used by the herders and the farmers, so the people who go there with their cattle and the people who permanently try to use the land. And because it's increasingly becoming scarce because of climate change, also the conflicts between these groups in society are on the rise. And we clearly see that in countries like Mali, but also Burkina Faso now becoming more unstable, Niger. So in the Sahel region, the resource scarcity relationship with conflict is very obvious. And in the Horn of Africa, you actually have similar issues at stake.
Uh-huh. Now, what would you consider to be the opportunities presented by addressing climate change-related security challenges?
Well, I think that's a very good question, because that should also be more and more the focus. If you look at the regions I just discussed, and which are relatively unstable, and there's many more, you also see that so far not so much climate change funding is going there, because it's considered unstable and can you really work there? But I think if you would combine, let's say, climate change objectives with peace and security objectives, and you would take this more into consideration, you could work to a more general sustainability of these regions. So for instance, planting trees, combating desertification, putting people who have to share a river in the same room and trying to get a dialogue among them, renewable energy projects could all help to improve the situation of people and take away, let's say, these root causes of terrorism, violence, migration. Whereas now the traditional solutions are more, let's say, send more soldiers to these regions to keep them stable and stop people from migrating and stop people from entering into terror groups. Perhaps more investments in, let's say, climate solutions could be a more long-lasting alternative.
Well, that concludes our interview. Louise van Schaik, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian. It was a pleasure. And thank you for having me.
You're listening to Business of Weather, produced in association with Asia Climate Forum, Asia's largest event dedicated to addressing climate change, flooding, and poor air quality.